Welcome, investors, to the Absolute Return Podcast, your source for stock market analysis, global macro musings, and hedge fund investment strategies. Your hosts, Julian Klimochko and Michael Kesslering, aim to bring you the knowledge and analysis you need to become a more intelligent and wealthier investor. This episode is brought to you by Accelerate Financial Technologies. Accelerate, because performance matters. Find out more at accelerateshares.com.
Welcome, podcast listeners, to episode 85 of the Absolute Return Podcast. I'm Julian Klimochko.
And I'm Mike Kesslering.
Today is Friday, September 4th, just heading into a long weekend here. Markets closed on Monday in the U.S. and Canada. We're here to summarize key events that happened this week and provide some insights on those. And we really wanted to highlight three specific events in the M&A and SPAC space. First, really interesting news in the hostile M&A sector, this time up in Canada. Well, involving U.S. entity Altice, they announced the unsolicited takeover offer for a cable company, Cogeco. Are they going to go hostile on this deal? We chat about specifics here and some potential scenarios in which this deal could go. Big news in the SPAC space with EV battery maker QuantumScape to go public through the special purpose acquisition company Kensington Capital. What does the market think of this deal? And lastly, some more bidding war news with Cardinal Resources as the Russian firm Nordgold boosted their hostile takeover for Cardinal by 36% as they're going toe-to-toe against Chinese white knight Shandong Gold. What's the end game on this deal? But first, Mike, let's start off on this Altice / Rogers potential hostile takeover for Cogeco, which equates to a potentially $10.3 billion takeover at the current price, which would be the largest M&A trade in Canada since the 2016 merger of Potash and Agrium. So certainly tremendous size here. Now, what happened specifically was cable consolidator Altice, this is run by French cable billionaire Patrick Drahi, who was once a protege of the legendary John Malone. He announced an unsolicited $10.3 billion takeover for Canadian cable operator Cogeco through a publicly disclosed bear hug letter. And a bear hug letter is effectively just when you put together a hostile proposal and a letter and send it to the board of directors of the target company. And in this scenario, they made that bear hug letter public and such that they could get a reaction out of the stock and out of the media and ultimately a reaction out of the target shareholders.
And now, it's typically after pursuing the company privately through their board and management team and directors, and then going public with it.
Yeah, perhaps there's some frustration on lack of progress, so it's kind of stepping things up to the next level, putting it out there to generate some sort of forced response from the target board of directors. Now, this unsolicited proposal, which came with a 35% premium for Cogeco shares, it's just massive in size. I mean, north of $10 billion. So it should be a story that everyone's paying attention to. And the way that it works is Altice isn't actually going to buy the whole company for $10.3 billion. It's unique such that Rogers Communications, a giant Canadian telecom operator, is involved as well. They're basically tag-teaming with Altice to split Cogeco in half, in which Rogers would acquire the Canadian assets for $5.5 billion. Because Altice really only wants Atlantic Broadband, which are the U.S. assets that Cogeco owns. Atlantic is the ninth largest cable company in the U.S. with nearly 500,000 residential and business customers. Now, this acquisition would expand the operations of Altice across 11 states on the East Coast of the U.S. Really, the play here is Drahi wants to position Altice such that it can better compete with Charter and Comcast, basically the two U.S. cable giants of which he's battling up against. Obviously, his former mentor controls Charter. So super interesting dynamics with respect to Altice's strategy. Should also note that it's I'm not sure if unprecedented is the right word, but very unique to involve sort of a joint bidder. We see that quite a bit on private equity deals, refer to those as club deals, but not often on a strategic basis. What is additionally interesting is that Rogers has wanted to acquire Cogeco for over a decade now. Back when Ted Rogers, the founder, was alive, he was actively buying Cogeco shares in the market such that they now are the largest shareholders of the company on an economic basis. However, the major hurdle here for this deal is the Audette family, which controls Cogeco through multiple voting shares. Thus far, not feeling it. They have rebuffed Altice's advances here very quickly, and that's somewhat troubling from, so you're looking at this from an arbitrager's perspective. If they come back within hours and publicly shoot it down, quoting the family here, they said they have already indicated that the family does not intend to sell its shares and will not support the proposal. This morning, Cogeco board of directors rejecting the deal outright, not really giving any reason aside from lack of support from the Audette family. And what real head scratchers, the family really hasn't indicated why. They just flat out said, we're not going to sell our shares. I'm not sure if it's a price thing. Certainly everyone has their price. And with respect to a bear hug letter in the context of an unsolicited proposal, we say this time and time again, we saw it on the Tiffany LVMH deal, you never start at your highest price, so clearly there's higher to go from Altice and Rogers with respect to this unsolicited proposal, which at this point stands at a 35% premium. Who knows if the Audette family is basically engaging in this back and forth sort of negotiation with respect to, hey, you know, we don't support this, translation being, give us more. And so that's ultimately something that we can see, because ultimately the family holds 69% of all voting rights of Cogeco, which in turn controls 82.9% of all voting rights of the subsidiary company Cogeco Communications, which is pretty strange because both are actually publicly traded. So there is a somewhat complex corporate structure here behind multiple voting shares, two publicly traded corporations, and one in which one owns a stake in the other. So there's some sort of holdco discount dynamics happening here. But nonetheless, Altice has offered the Audette family $800 million to win their support for the deal. Cogeco shares up nearly 20%. On the news, and I mean, $800 million, pretty hard to turn that down, but nonetheless, who knows, maybe they're out for a billion.
And that's the problem with that. We've spoken about this a lot with dual class voting shares, is the Audette family in this situation is really not aligned with minority shareholders in the sense of looking out for what's best.
Or and perhaps they are in a somewhat secretive manner, because maybe their message is, hey, give us more money.
Yeah, and I guess that's the difficulty with the very short response, right, is it really doesn't give insight into what their thought process is. And you had mentioned it from the arbitrager's perspective, but as well, even just for regular long-only investors that have been invested in the name for the long term, this does act as a potential catalyst for them to be able to realize the value from where it has been trading and where they likely believe it should be trading.
Yeah, speaking of which, for disclosure purposes, we are and have been long at Cogeco, both securities, corporation and the communications stock. We are long in the Accelerate Enhanced Canadian Benchmark Alternative Fund, ATSX, have been a long-term shareholder. I mean, just because the stock has been so undervalued, our quant screens picked that up, but obviously happy with that. But from an arbitrager's perspective, we don't have a position, and there are many ways in which this could go. Typically, we like to participate in Canadian hostile takeovers because there's a key difference between them and the U.S. Because in the U.S., the board can implement a poison pill and effectively stop the bidder in its tracks. In Canada, the regulators strike down poison pills after a limited amount of time. They give the target time to shop the company. However, they don't allow the poison pill to remain in place, opening them up for a hostile takeover, of which are typically successful in Canada. However, here, as we discussed, major hurdle being the Ayotte family's controlling stake, not from an economic standpoint, but from a multiple voting share standpoint. And that's why this situation could go a number of ways. Clearly, it's not going to be sold at the current price. Either it's a stalemate, we'll get no deal, or if Ayotte family is on board at a higher price, we'll get a deal at a higher price. So interesting potential dynamics on the scenario analysis on this M&A trade. But now on to some SPAC news. In the blank check space, we had EV battery maker QuantumScape announced a deal with Kensington Capital, which is a special purpose acquisition company that's fairly new to the market. I mean, they just IPO'd a few months ago. Now, QuantumScape, it was basically VC-backed. They manufacture electrical vehicle batteries. In fact, Bill Gates is one of the investors in the company, and it is a highly speculative entity. They're working on this new technology that could power electric vehicles for basically double what they can do right now. It was spun out of, I believe, Stanford University in terms of the research team backing this technology. And the market has absolutely loved this one. The stock has more than doubled over the past 2 days on this news. And just the trading behind it is absolutely mind-blowing. QuantumScape did a $230 million IPO at 10 bucks a share, so the total shares outstanding, 23 million shares. Just yesterday, the day of announcement, they traded 88 million shares in units. That's nearly fourfold. The entire company trading in one single day, so clearly you got a lot of day trading activity, sort of back and forth, bidding it up, and huge trading today. The thing about QuantumScape and where we've seen the most well-received SPAC deals lately are the ones with the most speculative and furthest out revenues. For example, QuantumScape, they won't see any revenue from their lithium metal solid state batteries for at least 7 more years. That's right. We won't see material revenue according to their forecasts until 2027. And typically forecasts are, you know, the best case scenario. Those are generally delayed, I'd say, more often than not. And I did go through their investor presentation, and they showed some valuation metrics based off of 2028 EBITDA multiples, which, frankly, I've never seen before. So clearly, it relies on some, some imagination from investors. But clearly, at this point, given where the stock's been trading over 100% in one day, clearly investors have stars in their eyes, don't they?
Yeah, they certainly do. It's just a crazy amount of speculation with just like a lot of execution risk in terms of you could be a believer in the thesis, but the execution risk as a company is pretty substantial. And it's really just, like you had mentioned, a continuation of the EV trend within SPACs, which those just are absolutely popping off when they announce something within that space.
They go hand in hand.
Absolutely. And so within that, looking at these very far out projections, actually this week in other SPAC news, actually Chamath Palihapitiya, he put out a tweet storm, which was really around the pushback that he got. I believe it was on the 3D printing deal, where he showed his little deal sheet, and it was based on...
He's a pipe investor in that one, right?
Yes, yeah. His estimates on their business 4 or 5 years out. And his rationale was that a low interest rate environment explains why this makes sense. And I would encourage our listeners to go look at his tweet storm there, as it is quite interesting. But I think it kind of misses the point on the pushback around that, where the problem isn't necessarily the valuation multiple that's slapped on there. It's really that it's just very difficult to estimate that far out operationally. And when you're looking at a company that's not going to generate revenue until 2027, I believe they're starting to produce with Volkswagen in this situation in 2024. But, you know, like you're looking so far into the future that just building your own estimates and conviction around that is incredibly difficult. So that's where I think personally, that's where my pushback would be, is it's just the difficulty in estimation.
Oh, for sure. Because you certainly need to risk a cash flow stream that's 8 years out. And that is highly speculative because they're not even close to being able to attain that at this point. It requires so many things to go right and so many things, quite frankly, to go wrong for their competitors, assuming that someone else isn't going to come up with something better.
And also that could be on the upside as well, where your estimates today could be wildly, wildly undervalued in terms of that. So yeah, that's where I don't have a problem with the discount rate. That's less of an issue from my side. It's more so just coming up with the actual cash flows as well. Just very quickly in other spots, SPAC news. It did come out yesterday that Bill Ackman's SPAC, which we've talked about quite a bit on the podcast, is that it's actually had been in talks with Airbnb, but obviously Airbnb is looking to go the traditional IPO route or the direct listing route. And as well that they had been talking yesterday with Stripe for their IPO, where if for those unfamiliar with Stripe, the payment company that has been founded by the Collison brothers that are very revered in the startup world, which would be very interesting if they brought that company through a SPAC. I think that would be a big stamp of approval on the space.
Well, certainly. Wasn't it valued north of $20 billion in their last financing round? It
certainly was. And yeah, just a very, very well revered within the startup world.
Yeah, so some big news in the blank check space. It's as crazy as ever. You're seeing this so-called SPAC pop, which I refer to it somewhat analogous to the IPO pop, but the SPAC will announce a deal and the stock will rally significantly, which is really what we try to monetize, being SPAC arbitragers, is you get in pre-deal, they announce a transaction, a business combination with a private company. Hopefully it's well received by public market investors. And what we've seen this year more than ever is this playbook that SPAC management teams need to go through to attain that SPAC pop. Clearly the market is looking for something particular, anything with electric vehicles, and absolutely like grand slam, anything in the online gaming space, very well received. And so that's really where these speculators who get in after the deal gets announced, that's really what they want to see. And from an arbitrager's standpoint, that allows you to exit the investment at a large premium.
And actually, one last statistic on the topic of SPACs before we move on is, I believe it was CIBC came out today and said that this year SPAC issuance is on pace to be more than the last 10 years combined, which is an absolutely crazy statistic to put things into perspective.
Oh, certainly, because in July we had an all-time record north of 10 billion in SPAC IPOs, and it was almost beaten by August total tally of about 9.4 billion, which is effectively greater than what we did in the biggest year ever, which was last year, up until this year, which is obviously crushing it. But this market continues to be enamored with anything EV related. As I discussed in our AlphaRank SPAC monitor, which I released last month on our website, accelerateshares.com, where you can check it out, I stated that the market is just so, so hungry for these EV deals. They want electric vehicle deals, they want more of them, and they want them now. Market remains in love with these story stocks. So are we gonna see more? Most certainly. Like, you can't bet against that. And these SPACs will continue to pop, and that's why we own about 60 of them. On to some other M&A news. This is really an underfollowed situation. And what we've seen over the past 6 months has been an incredibly lucrative M&A trade up in Canada with respect to bidding wars. We discussed a number of times Guyana Goldfields, which from start to finish, back and forth between friendly white knight acquirer and hostile bidder, that stock was bid up 185%, which is a home run as an arbitrager if you're long and participating in that situation. Now, Cardinal could be something different. After Guyana Goldfields, we did see a bidding war on Torstar, which we were involved with. We did see a bidding war come out on that gaming stock, Five Aces. More of the same up in Canada. It is dual listed in Australia as well. Cardinal Resources, a back and forth between Russia's Nord Gold, who in this situation is the hostile interloper, who currently has the highest bid for Cardinal Resources. This week, they boosted their offer by 36% from 66 cents per share to 90 cents per share. Now, being a penny stock, many people assume that it's tiny, but this deal is nearly $500 million. That's just the dynamic you see with Australian listed stocks, of which Cardinal is dual listed, Australia and Canada is. Surprisingly, in Australia, nearly everything's a penny stock, but they'll just have like billions of shares outstanding for some odd reason, but that just seems to be how certain markets develop. So the Russian interloper's bid here, Nord Gold, is currently higher than Chinese friendly acquirer Shandong Gold's 70 cents per share deal to acquire Cardinal that the board currently supports, because that is like a definitive agreement that they entered into. Shandong does have matching rights, which we should note do expire on Monday, September 7th. So by the time this podcast comes out on Tuesday, perhaps we'll know the conclusion. But right now, it is unknown. Nonetheless, the target's prized asset is the Namdini Gold Project in Ghana, West Africa, which contains over 5 million ounces of the precious metals. That's what both these acquirers are looking for. And we've seen a lot of consolidation from Shandong Gold. They've just been absolutely snapping up a ton of junior gold miners. They are trying to buy some other ones currently. So clearly these are both reputable buyers, very large, have a ton of cash to spend, and they are looking to go on a shopping spree. I just wanted, for listeners' point of view, to talk about how this whole bidding war developed. So in mid-March, Nord Gold bought a 16.4% toehold in Cardinal at 46 cents per share, which cost them $37 million. So clearly they are committed to this deal, pot committed perhaps, with nearly a $40 million initial investment. They bought more shares to take their stake to 20%, submitted a non-binding unsolicited proposal for Cardinal at 46 cents per share. Cardinal board did what any board should do, put the company up for sale, run a sale process. They got a friendly deal with White Knight, and White Knight is someone who just comes along and comes with a bid that's friendly to the board, above and beyond what the hostile interloper, what the hostile bidder is offering. So Shandong Gold serving as White Knight, striking a friendly deal at 60 cents per share. Nord Gold wasn't done. They came back topping it with a 10% premium at 66 cents per share. Shandong Gold wasn't having it. They topped that, striking a friendly deal, increasing from 60 to 70 cents per share, which is where we were earlier in the week. And now we saw Nord Gold 2 days ago increasing their offer to 90 cents. So if we look at the magnitude of this bid bump from 66 to 90, which is a 36% bump, significantly higher than what they did before, you gotta ask, is this a knockout bid? Was it meant to scare off Shandong such that Nord Gold can win the prized asset here of Cardinal Resources? What are your thoughts?
It certainly seems that way in terms of the dynamic there. And in terms of, you know, what these companies are going after is, as you had mentioned, the Namdini Gold Project in Ghana, where it's really viewed as one of the most promising and underdeveloped gold deposits in Africa. And so the rationale for both of these companies would be that they would be able, with their access to capital, they would be able to provide the operations enough capital to truly fully develop this resource, which in their opinion is underdeveloped at this point. But as well, you know, this is very interesting in the sense of it is a cash bidding war versus a bidding war that has share consideration, where as an arbitrager, you're able to capture 100% of the upside with multiple bidders, where you don't have to choose what your hedge is going to be. In some instances, even in a merger bidding war, you would just go unhedged until you got more insight into where things were going to shake out. But Julian, how does your probability probability tree look like for Shandong coming in with a higher takeout versus just matching versus walking away and the company going with Nordgold?
You know what? This one's real tough to say whether or not they'll match, whether or not they'll try with their own knockout bid to really get Nordgold to go and pound sand. So it's tough to say, but nonetheless, I mean, you look at where the current share price is trading and it's not really pricing in any upside optionality, so still produces really interesting potential investment for investors, but you really laid out the scenario, potential scenarios there. Either Shandong can just say, look, we're out, it got too expensive, but typically buyers do that when they can't afford it. Clearly they can't afford it. Just depends on how badly they want it. And the NPV on this asset, as you mentioned, it could be fairly attractive for acquirers that really want 5 million ounces of gold reserves in terms of being able to develop those gold reserves. So certainly they could come back and match. They could come back and increase it. I mean, a dollar would be great for arbitragers on this one. Or they could just drop out and allow Nordgold to have it. What's important is to see what the market's pricing in, and clearly the market's not really pricing in any upside optionality, which is interesting to note. As I indicated, this is a very underfollowed situation, has been inefficiently traded. We are able to buy with really no upside optionality priced in, and it's been incredibly lucrative because Cardinal is a core holding. For disclosure purposes of the Accelerate Arbitrage Fund, stock up nearly 30% this week on the news, which is great for us. Will this bidding war continue? Only time will tell. Key dates, Monday, September 7th, Shandong's matching right expires. So we will certainly see something happening next week, and hopefully the back and forth can continue on this one. Super interesting situation and really an M&A 101 learning experience on hostile takeovers, bidding wars, and things of that nature, which we continue to see in Canadian M&A. And so for arbitragers, if you're not participating in these, then you're really missing out something to take stock of and definitely consider participating in if that's your thing. But other than that, that pretty much wraps things up for us on this episode of the Absolute Return Podcast. If you enjoyed it, please leave us a review, tell your friends and coworkers. You can always check out more episodes on absolutereturnpodcast.com and definitely follow us on Twitter. Mike, what's your handle?
It is M_Kesslering.
And you can follow me at Julian Klimochko, KLYMOCHKO. Hope you have a great long weekend. Pens down for Monday as New York, NASDAQ, Toronto all closed for trading. Go take some time off, do something fun, get your mind off the volatile tech stocks this week. Clearly, in my opinion, the growth bubble may have been pricked. It was just announced by or unveiled by Financial Times that the tremendous amount of upside call options on these story stock technology names were being snapped up in unprecedented size by none other than SoftBank, which is absolutely perfect in my opinion.
Can't blame Robinhood traders anymore.
Yeah, so you had a nice, interesting combination of Robinhood and Masayoshi Son coming in for that upside gorging on tech stocks. But until next week, wish you all the best in your investing and we'll chat with you soon. Cheers.
Thanks for tuning in to the Absolute Return Podcast. This episode was brought to you by Accelerate Financial Technologies. Accelerate, because performance matters. Find out more at accelerateshares.com. The views expressed in this podcast are the personal views of the participants and do not reflect the views of Accelerate. No aspect of this podcast constitutes investment, legal, or tax advice. Opinions expressed in this podcast should not be viewed as a recommendation or solicitation of an offer to buy or sell any securities or investment strategies. The information and opinions in this podcast are based on current market conditions and may fluctuate and change in the future. No representation or warranty, expressed or implied, is made on behalf of Accelerate as to the accuracy or completeness of the information contained in this podcast. Accelerate does not accept any liability for any direct, indirect, or consequential loss or damage suffered by any person as a result of relying on all or any part of this podcast, and any liability is expressly disclaimed.